Thanks for listening. I'm Scott Nelson for WGTD. Up next, it's The Morning Show with Greg Berg.
And we welcome you to the Friday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. A very important event is coming up in Milwaukee next Tuesday under the auspices of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee School of Continuing Education. It's an annual event called Trauma in Our Community, Reimagining Solutions for Healing. This is an event that can be attended in person or virtually, but one way or another, people who are interested can access a wide array of presentations on a variety of issues related to or adjacent to the experience of trauma, and specifically what we can do to help those who have experienced trauma to recover from it, to rebuild their lives. And I was sent the full schedule of presentations, and each and every one seemed especially seemed interesting and compelling, but I chose a couple that I thought were exceptionally interesting. And we're going to be hearing from one of those presenters today and three other presenters on Monday to help you understand the importance of Tuesday's issue, of Tuesday's event. Today, I'm excited to speak with Jason Witt, who is Outreach Specialist for the Wisconsin Child Welfare Professional Development System, who is going to be giving a presentation on the utilization of AI, artificial intelligence, in certain therapy situations, but particularly as it relates to people who have mental health difficulties and especially those who are attempting to recover from painful trauma of one kind or another. And for many of us, AI is something that is actually a part of our daily lives without us even being maybe fully aware of it. But certainly, I think for most of us, it is at least disconcerting to think about the possibility of AI being utilized in, for instance, therapy. And Jason Witt's presentation is designed to help us understand how such a thing might be possible in terms of being beneficial, but also to highlight some of the ethical concerns that are raised by this possibility. His presentation, as it so happens, will be the presentation that kicks off the afternoon portion of Tuesday's event. Again, he is presenting as part of this event called Trauma in Our Community, his specific presentation titled The Role of AI in Mental Health Support, Complexities and Considerations. Jason Witt, we welcome you to The Morning Show.
Thank you, Greg. Good to be here.
I'm glad we can have this conversation. Ahead of us, sort of digging into the very specific, focused topic at hand, I think it would be interesting for our listeners to learn a little bit about who you are and maybe the pathway that has led you into the work that you have been doing really for the last quarter century or so.
Yeah, no, thank you for that. So I started off my career, got my master's degree in clinical psychology, began as many human service professionals tend to begin in doing some residential work for 2.5 years, transitioned from that into doing intensive in-home psychotherapy with children and families for a little more than a dozen years. From there, went on to teach higher ed for almost a dozen years as well, and now very happy to be in the role that I'm in now. So I've always had a fascination with technology and how we can utilize technology to improve ourselves professionally, certainly, as well as personally. But my background as a therapist that's now led me into this training role, I feel like there's been a nice path that's led me to where I'm at now.
I should think that doing the work that you have done over the last 25 years or so means that you have done this work over the course of a period of time that have seen a lot of changes, even beyond the one that we're going to especially talk about today, the introduction of certain technologies like AI. But even beyond that, I should think that it has been, in a sense, an eventful 25 years for anybody like yourself engaged in this kind of work.
Right, and it's interesting because when I think about advancements in the field of human services, social work, counseling, therapy, and in some ways it still really is this burgeoning field where there are some kind of thoughts or approaches or ways of doing things that have a lot of evolving to do. So on the one hand, I do still see some elements of the work that's stuck in the past and could use some work. But in other ways, right, there's some exciting things that are happening, and I think one of those things unquestionably is the potential utilization and already is happening utilization of AI when it comes to mental health treatment. And some agencies, organizations are already trying to be on the forefront of incorporating that into their work for all kinds of different reasons that I imagine we'll be talking about today.
Mm-hmm. Before we get into that, I think it would be good for us to know something about the specific agency with which you work as an outreach specialist, Wisconsin Child Welfare Professional Development System. Tell us who, what that is.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's a great question. So we're an organization that is, my goodness, we have the benefit and the great fortune of having a number of experienced social workers, counselors, folks with direct service work as a significant part of their experience and background. And our effort really is involved in doing professional development work with folks who are out there in the field working with kids, working with families. The particular team that I work with, which we've just rebranded to the Professional Development Network. We used to be called the Home Visiting Team, but that was not really a formal name per se. But really what our job is to try to train home visitors and other early childhood professionals to be better at the work that they do, you know, to assist in that onboarding process when we've got new home visitors that are coming into the field, but also to exist or to improve and to assist supervisors and folks who have been in the field for years. Because again, there are always new ways of assisting folks who are, you know, hoping to work with kids and families. So that's our job, is to do professional development with folks who are in the field already working with. And we work all over the state, you name it. We travel all over the place to run trainings, run virtual trainings. So we're everywhere in the state all the time.
Right. And it's important for us to acknowledge one really sobering reality, and that is the fact that there aren't enough people out there doing much of this work, especially when it comes to serious mental health issues for young children and for young people, and I suppose in some respects because there is that acute shortage that does not seem to be getting any better as far as I can tell from what I read and hear, that for those who are in the field, it's even more important that they are doing their work as well as they possibly can.
Right, and also engaging in the kind of, you know, self-care and the other considerations that is really necessary for folks who are really stretched thin, you know, overworked, overwhelmed. And, you know, this field also tends to, how do I want to say this, attract a certain kind of individual who wants to just give and give and give, you know, into their work. And it's incredibly stressful work. It's incredibly challenging and demanding. And I don't know that there's a single agency involved in any kind of mental health work that would tell you, oh gosh, yeah, we got plenty of folks. You know, no worries, we're fully staffed. You know, we've got, you know, low, you know, numbers when it comes to the number of individuals, clients, families that our professionals are working with, you know. So yeah, we're doing great. I don't know that you would talk to any agency that would say anything like that anywhere in the country.
Right. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Jason Witt, an outreach specialist with Wisconsin Child Welfare Professional Development System. He serves in a number of capacities for the National Organization for Human Services, has worked for more than a quarter century in the human services sector as both a provider and an educator. He is one of the presenters of an important event coming up in Milwaukee this Tuesday, Trauma in Our Community, Reimagining Solutions for Healing. Jason Witt's specific presentation is titled The Role of AI in Mental Health Support, Complexities and Considerations. So I think we should get into the heart of the matter, that is this thing called AI, and then the way in which it is currently being deployed in your part of the world, so to speak. And maybe even ahead of us digging into that question, it would probably be helpful for certain listeners especially if we have a little clearer notion of what we mean by this thing called AI. And at the, as I think I briefly mentioned in the introduction, AI is something that nearly all of us have in our daily lives to one degree or another, in many cases without even being all that aware. And I think most of us at this moment still do not probably sufficiently grasp exactly what AI is and its full implications. So let's maybe begin there with your best definition of what AI is, and then we can talk about how it is currently being deployed in the kind of services that you provide.
Sure, I think that, you know, the best way to think about the specific type of artificial intelligence that we're talking about, either in relation to my presentation or the kind that most people tend to use, because there's all kinds of artificial intelligence that has been out for decades, frankly. Anybody who's ever used Microsoft Word and had, you know, the little blue underlining and the red underlining underneath, that's artificial intelligence. That is, you know, software that has been designed to analyze your grammar and your spelling and things like that. So there's certainly a broader definition of what artificial intelligence is, which is, again, a programmed computer utilized analysis of, you know, again, in the case of Microsoft Word, something that you've composed that it's then going to analyze and assess for, you know, how well you've written it and give you suggestions on things like that. I think what we're more specifically talking about when it comes to artificial intelligence, when it comes to mental health treatment, or the way that people tend to use it, you know, certainly one of the most, if not the most popular versions of that is ChatGPT, which is through OpenAI, is a conversational way of either engaging in some kind of conversation or asking it to help you generate some ideas or compose an email or really be a personal assistant in a kind of a way to an individual for all kinds of different reasons. And one of the things that I talk about in my presentation is the way that people are using AI nowadays. And one of the elements of the presentation talks about, you know, how were folks using it last year? What were like the top 100 reasons? And, you know, what are the top 100 reasons this year? And the Harvard Business Review did a survey that just came out last month. They had done one last May as well. Then they updated it for just this last month for this year, that found that the number one reason, the number one way that people are utilizing AI right now is for companionship and therapy. That is the number one reason that folks are using AI right now. So when we think about all the things like, oh, writing emails or give me some ideas or, hey, let's play a game or whatever, it is companionship and therapy is the number. Last year was the number two reason. So it jumped up from number two to number one this year.
Wow. I think for people hearing that, I mean, where that's not necessarily part of their own lives or experience, I should think that's probably a bit disconcerting, exciting, but disconcerting to think about AI being utilized in this way. One of the specifics that are mentioned in the summary of what you're going to be talking about on Tuesday is something called AI chatbots. C-H-A-T-B-O-T-S. Explain what an AI chatbot is and to what extent that is something that serves the need or desire that you were just now talking about.
Right. So there are, my goodness, far too many of these things to name, but let's talk about like what this involves. Generally, a chatbot is something that has been programmed to be able to engage in conversation with another person, with a human being. And those chatbots can be very custom designed to present in a certain way. So they could be, you know, a professional assistant. They could be providing some kind of customer support. They could be, in the case of what's called Wobot, is literally designed to provide mental health support to an individual. So these chatbots are all over the place, and they serve all kinds of different purposes, both professional or personal. In the case of a lot of young people, chatbots are being utilized for all kinds of ways when it comes to gaming, personal interaction, friendship, romance, you name it. There's a chatbot that's out there, and in most cases, hundreds or thousands of them that exist to provide whatever kind of computer-generated, human-like interaction you're looking for.
Wow. So help us understand how that works. Let's keep it in the realm of young people, since of course that's a big part of the kind of work that you do. So when somebody wants to, in a sense, have companionship and sort of emotional support from one of these chatbots, what ends up kind of guiding the specifics of that interaction? Is that something that the consumer, so to speak, the receiver of this, has much control over in terms of what that relationship, if we want to call it that, is going to be like? What ends up kind of creating the specific interplay that occurs?
Absolutely. So let's say I am a high schooler, and I'm feeling particularly disconnected from my peers and feeling like, gosh, you know, humans just ain't doing it for me. And so I'm just, you know, what am I if not an advanced primate? And there's no such thing as an advanced primate that isn't looking for and seeking and needing social interaction. But if I'm feeling as though people aren't getting me, what am I going to do? I've got this opportunity now. It's 2025. There's all these chatbots online. So some of them are custom designed to present with a certain kind of personality or to kind of replicate like a famous person or a famous character, you know, from a video game or from a TV show or from a movie. And so they've been designed to act like perhaps the favorite character of someone from a TV show that one of these, you know, kids really loves. So there's that. There's some that are custom created and designed in a way to present in that specific way. However, in many instances, a user is given the capability of custom designing their own from scratch chatbot that's going to interact in whatever kind of ways they want and present with whatever kind of personalities they want. So it's across the board, whatever you want a chatbot to be, you can find a way really easily to either create that yourself or find someone else who has already created that for you.
Wow. Is this a medium that is both visual and auditory? I mean, are you seeing the image of this other side of the relationship, or is this more word-driven and really more of an audio experience?
Yeah, so as it exists in the moment, the visual's not quite there yet. I give it certainly less than 5 years, probably more like less than 2 years before that becomes a reality. So right now, the primary way that this happens is through typing or texting. So you're either, you know, typing away in your phone, typing on your keyboard. That's the primary way that you'd see this interaction taking place. But there is that capability of having a, you know, an audio exchange, you know, where you're speaking and speaking back to you in a way that it can hear you, you can hear it. And those kinds of advancements are really increasing. So to speak about ChatGPT, for example, there are several different voice options that you can choose from when you're having that interaction. So depending on, you know, what you want the person you're speaking to sound like. And then there's certain capabilities with a lot of these different sources where it depends on, are you a free user? Are you a subscribed user? Are you going to be limited in terms of the number of interactions you can have? You know, is the capability, the language processing capability of that chatbot going to be more advanced if I'm subscribed and paying some money? And that is certainly the case with ChatGPT right now. If you're a paid user, you have many, many, many more prompts that you were allowed before it says, okay, you need to kind of slow down for a while and, you know, take a break, versus a free user that's really limited. But I got to tell you, you know, from having had, my goodness gracious, I couldn't even put a number on it, the number of hours that I've spent exploring ChatGPT, using ChatGPT, it's progressed to the point to where you most of the time wouldn't realize, hey, I'm talking to some kind of artificial intelligence here. You would think if you overheard the conversation, it sounds awfully natural at this point. It's pretty wild.
Wow.
So the way you make mention of this in the summary of your presentation on Tuesday is that these chatbots in many cases are being essentially used for mental health support. Although I suspect that if you were to ask maybe the typical young person utilizing AI in this way, utilizing AI chatbots, they probably wouldn't phrase it that way. They might not even recognize that, even if they use different language. I suspect they wouldn't frame this experience as exactly that. But we all need mental health support, and this sort of prompts the question then of this kind of utilization of AI. Is it a positive, a negative, or a very complicated mix of the two? Where do you fall at this point when you think about this? Or is it really too complicated to even summarize in those kind of blunt terms?
No, I think it's really, I think, at the heart of the presentation that I'm going to be doing. I mean, literally in the title, you know, complexities and considerations, because yes, it is incredibly complex. I think one of the first thing, not I think, I know that one of the things that I'm going to emphasize the most during my presentation and that I'd love to talk more about today is that this isn't an either or. This is like most things in life. This is a both and, right? So for all those individuals who say, oh my goodness gracious, AI is going to be the death of all of us. You know, Arnold Schwarzenegger is going to come and kill us all and the Terminator is upon us and, you know, our robot overlords, it's just a matter of time. You know, that's a little bit dramatic, but you know, there are a lot of people that for very, very understandable reasons have a significant fear of artificial intelligence, and full transparency, they should. There are a lot of really scary things about it. To say that AI has literally contributed to deaths of individuals, including children, is not an overstatement. That's not an alarmist thing to say. There's examples that we can find all over the place of children who have, quote unquote, fallen in love with a chatbot and ultimately ended up taking their own life as a result of some interactions gone very, very bad. You know, on the other side of that is the ways that artificial intelligence has already and will continue to provide for, I mean, really life-saving intervention for individuals, whether it's mental health, whether it's the advancements in doing things like assisting with imaging, you know, for like an MRI, or, you know, someone has a mammogram, someone has any kind of health work that is done, that AI can provide an assistance with that. That's only going to become more capable in a way that's going to save lives. But if we focus specifically on the mental health aspects of this, and to allude to one of the questions or comments that you had made a little while ago about whether or not kids are even aware of the fact, am I using this for mental health treatment? Because, you know, would they even call it that? You know, in most instances, in many instances, certainly, kids will say things like, hey, I'm really depressed. You know, I don't know who to talk to. I can't talk to my parents. I don't have any friends. there are all kinds of instances where kids are absolutely reaching out in ways that are very clear that they're seeking mental health support for anxiety, depression, any number of other things. So the reality is that this is kind of everything that just about anybody has said that AI is. It's scary, it's amazing, it's incredible, it's only going to get better. The U.S. has committed to be engaged in assisting in a $500 billion investment in AI development. This is not going away. This isn't flying cars. This isn't jetpacks that we're taking to work. This is here. It's only going to increase. And it's complex. It's nuanced. It's subtle. There's gray area. There's all kinds of reasons for all kinds of folks to feel all kinds of ways about AI to try to put a bow on it.
Right.
We're speaking with Jason Witt in anticipation of a presentation he's going to be giving on Tuesday for an event at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee for their event, Trauma in Our Community, Reimagining Solutions for Healing. His presentation is titled The Role of AI in Mental Health Support, Complexities and Considerations. So when we are talking about a very specifically a young person who's not just maybe a little lonesome, but when we are talking about a young person who has experienced some kind of trauma, how would you characterize the ability of, for instance, an AI chatbot to be a significant, maybe even sufficient tool for dealing with that trauma? I mean, I suspect that those who developed this, certainly at the outset, probably never imagined it being utilized in exactly that sort of fashion. And even if now the developers of AI are aware of this, I don't know to what extent they are thinking about these kind of details in what they are designing. But what is your sense of how this can function in that particular way in addressing this particular need that a young person might have? I mean, very specifically related to some kind of trauma they have experienced.
Sure. So it's not an exaggeration to say that many of these chatbots are well-versed in things like cognitive behavior therapy and motivational interviewing. Like, they know these treatment modalities, thoroughly and completely, to such an extent that I'll give you one example. I thought, you know what, let me just test this out real quick. I'm going to ask ChatGPT to be a client for me. And I want to practice my skills as a therapist. I want to practice my motivational interviewing skills. So can we just kind of do like a quick 10-15 minute role play of a session? So I'm going to ask you to present as, a 25-year-old mom who has a 3-year-old, and she's really struggling with being a parent, and her child is presenting with some things that she's really concerned about. I just want to practice my MI skills with this mom. And so we engage in this 10-15 minute long role play, and I said, okay, can we just stop for a second? I'd like you to give me feedback on how I'm doing so far in regards to my motivational interviewing skills. And, oh, well, Jason, you're doing a wonderful job with your asking open-ended questions and you're providing affirmations. I'd love to hear some more reflections. I haven't heard a summary yet, so maybe try and focus on those. I mean, it knows everything about these, you know, really popular treatment modalities, which also means it can deliver them itself. So if I asked it, hey, I'd love to talk to you about my struggles with anxiety, you know, and could you kind of approach talking to me from the lens of cognitive behavioral therapy? It will do it for you. It will act as a therapist if you ask it to act as a therapist for you. And it is absolutely the case that it knows how to replicate things like empathy. It can do an incredible job at asking open-ended questions and utilizing reflections and summaries and all of these therapeutic techniques that we know are the most essential and effective when it comes to working with humans. Now, if I'm a human being talking to a chatbot and the chatbot says to me, oh, I know how you feel, right? You know, you're like, no, you're a robot. You don't know. I mean, you're not a robot, but you know what I mean. So to a certain extent, there is a bit of suspension of disbelief that needs to take place when it comes to this. Now, so if I'm a young person and I've experienced a traumatic event and I want to process that with a chatbot, depending on the chatbot, it can usually do a good job of recognizing if you are experiencing a crisis and you are at such an extent to where there's a real risk of self-harm here, or some other crisis that could, you know, result in something really awful, it will recognize that and say, you know, look, I'm not a therapist, I'm not a counselor, you know, I think it would really be best if you reach out to a professional. Here is the 988, you know, hotline. Here is a resource in your community, you know, and it will make a referral essentially and say, hey, you need someone more than what I can provide for you. But if you're looking for, hey, you know what, I've been really struggling with motivation and it's just hard for me to get out of bed. I'm not getting outside. I'm not exercising. I'm not eating right. I'm not attending to all of my self-care needs. Can you help me come up with a plan that can get me started on the road to building up some motivation and getting myself to a healthier place? It is, honestly, Greg, it's going to knock that out of the park. Hmm. It is an incredible job of helping you develop a personal care plan that can be as specific as you want it to be. You can critique it and adjust it and modify it and say, hey, I love what you created, except for these two little elements. Can we talk about those two things a little bit more? But when we think about it from the standpoint of companionship and therapy, it will never stop listening to you. It will never break eye contact, so to speak. It will only ever give you feedback that is honest and good. It is going to be far more attentive to you than any human being could ever be. And so that presents its own challenges in its own right, right? Because this is an incredibly new thing that we're talking about when it comes to empathy, you know, from AI and what that means and what that does to the human brain and our experience of social interaction. So again, the complexities and considerations are all over the place about, my goodness, this can be this incredible resource for individuals, especially when we talk about folks who are uninsured, underinsured, for when we talk about kids who feel for all kinds of sometimes very justified ways, I don't have access to a professional because I'd have to talk to my parents, and my parents, for all kinds of different reasons, might not be, you know, open or welcoming to the kinds of things I want to talk about. So yeah, we're all over the place with considerations and capabilities and whatnot.
I suppose one thing that's interesting is that a given young person still has to have enough self-awareness to know that they are in a position of crisis and that they need to seek help. I mean, in the same way that, you know, you hope that they would seek out a counselor at school or a teacher or some trusted adult or even a peer who they would trust or something. But even though we're talking about an AI chatbot, in some respects, the transaction, if you will, the exchange, still has to begin with some motivation on the part of the young person, a motivation to seek meaningful help, even if the source of that help is going to be something as new and unconventional as AI.
Right. And yet we know that, especially these, you know, this newer generation, younger folks now, you know, whether we're talking about Generation Z or Gen Alpha, you know, there is almost zero separation between the young people that we have right now and their technology. You know, so whether it's their phone or otherwise, it's almost as though they're, that element of their identity is such that even though for some of us who are a little bit older, it might seem a little bit weird or strange or unusual or, you know, scary or whatever to reach out to this, you know, new technology, for young people, this is second nature. It's everything, their entire lives have been connected to YouTube or TikTok or you name it. All these technologies are just an essential element of their identity. So reaching out to AI feels incredibly natural to young people.
Hmm. I think the other aspect of this that we've not yet touched on is the possibility of this technology being folded into what we might think of as more standard mental health care. For instance, therapy situations, therapy environments in which the technology of AI is consciously utilized. I mean, not just something that a young person is doing in the privacy of their bedroom on their own, but that the mental health field itself is embracing this at least to some extent. First of all, kind of describe that landscape for us right now. The ways in which this is being utilized by mental health professionals, and to what extent that is occurring. I mean, is this still something that is relatively uncommon, or in fact, yes, are we seeing this anywhere and everywhere?
Yeah, definitely not anywhere and everywhere yet, for sure. I would consider this to be still pretty burgeoning, but every day more and more there are agencies, organizations that are utilizing AI to do things like between sessions check-ins, or that might be part of the, okay, you're going to be meeting with your therapist once a week, but in the days in between, we're going to ask you to do some daily, you know, journaling, and we're going to ask you to work with, whether it's Wobot or any of these other mental health developed chatbots, to kind of do a check-in and just sort of say, hey, how am I doing in regard to this treatment plan goal? You know, what was my level of motivation today? How am I feeling in regard to my anxiety on a scale of 1 to 10, and why? So it's engaged in some of that, you know, less clinical work, but more of the kind of in-between session, you know, check-in work. You know, we know that, for example, for cognitive behavior therapy, homework is an essential element of that treatment modality. And so AI can assist with some of that daily homework that is done, and then when you get back together with your therapist, you know, your therapist can obviously see the work that you've been doing, you know, can check those, the journaling and the daily logs and the homework that you've been completing in between sessions. So it becomes a way to kind of provide for a client to have some accountability and a way to check in and make sure that they're doing that homework in between sessions that sometimes doesn't happen for all kinds of reasons. And these chatbots are designed to be very easy and friendly, and so it can and has already shown to be a way of utilizing AI that improves outcomes for clients when it is carefully monitored and designed and utilized in a way that is, you know, again, careful and consideration and considering of all the ethical concerns that people have. So, you know, we, even though people are using AI in ways that are unsupervised and unguided, the best way that it can be utilized is in a situation like that, where there's a clinician, there's an organization, there's an agency that's monitoring that and really making sure that it's being utilized in ethical and moral ways.
How new is this? I mean, how long have mental health professionals and therapists and so on, how long have they been utilizing this, at least to some extent?
Yeah, I'd say in a very, very limited way, we were already seeing things as long as 10 years ago. So if you do research on this, you can look back and find research that has been done and studies that have been done on chatbots dating back almost 10 years. And again, though, that's, you know, in a really, really limited way, right? Just recognizing and thinking about, like, gosh, you know, what could we do with this? How could we program software, you know, that could, you know, provide what it is that we're looking for, again, especially this sort of between sessions kind of check-in type of stuff. But I will say that if you compared what a quote-unquote chatbot looked like 8 or 9 years ago compared to what they look like today, oh my goodness gracious, there's no comparison to the ways that chatbots sound, their capabilities. All of the elements of what we consider to be chatbots are so much more advanced now. And again, as someone who's really fascinated in this stuff, it does make me think about, okay, well, so what about 8 years from now? Like, what is that going to look like? You know? So at that point, my goodness, we're going to be so far into the visual representation. So now I'm not just typing with something, I'm not just hearing something, but I can see this AI assistant who can look and present incredibly human to such an extent. I mean, whether you've seen, you know, some of these deep fake videos that are out there online, you know, where we've got, you know, you would think that I'm watching like a real video of a real person. It's going to be indistinguishable. You will have no way of knowing I'm not talking to some AI chatbot in, 5, 6, 7 years from now.
Wow.
Your talk is designed to address some concerns. And of course, we've already kind of made mention of a few of them, but two that are specifically mentioned in your outline, one is privacy and another is safety. So describe what you would think are the primary concerns around those two particular issues when we are talking about AI in these particular situations.
Sure. Let me start with the safety element of this. And, you know, as I've already mentioned, it is the case that we can objectively state that, especially for kids and their utilization of AI, that it has led to harm. And there are all kinds of active lawsuits right now that exist for parents of kids who have, again, either taken their own lives or engaged in harm or all these negative outcomes that we've seen. So we know that there are safety concerns here, especially when kids are involved. And when it comes to privacy, just like almost anything else that we do online, we know that there's a lot of uncertainty when it comes to, okay, exactly what's happening with this data, right? So even if I'm using ChatGPT and I believe OpenAI to be amongst the more ethical of the companies that are out there in the development of AI, I'm still putting my stuff out there. And, you know, all of us have had those experiences of, oh gosh, I did a Google search on, you know, men's baseball cleats, and now I'm seeing ads everywhere I go online for men's baseball cleats. I'm getting, you know, pop-ups for sporting goods stores and everything like that, right? So we know that we're putting data out there into the metaverse, and it's going to result in some things. So I think that for mental health professionals, for human service workers, social workers, counselors, therapists, if you're planning on utilizing AI to even do things like I talked about earlier, like I want to practice my therapy skills, can we do a role play? Again, it's really incredible at doing those kinds of things, so I would encourage people to utilize that to improve their skills. But you certainly don't want to be putting, you know, personally identifiable information out there, whether it's for yourself, for your clients, you know, coworkers, things like that. There's just too much uncertainty right now when it comes to privacy considerations. So I would say it can be really effective. I would encourage people to utilize it. I think it is incredible and is only going to become more incredible. But it is also scary, and we don't know what's happening when it comes to the data. And these organizations can make all kinds of assurances of, you know, this and that, and don't worry, your secret is safe with us. But I'm not sure that I would necessarily trust that, just like I wouldn't necessarily trust all kinds of other technology that exists right now, as incredible as it is.
You are in the business of training people in your field. So to what extent is the utilization of AI part of that work? I mean, are you, in a sense, actively encouraging others in your field to make use of this technology and trying to guide them in terms of the wisest way to utilize this?
Yes. So the short answer is that, yes, I am encouraging folks to utilize this. So I've had the great privilege of being able to speak at a few different conferences about this already. So whether it's with my work with NOHS and speaking at, you know, their conference last year about AI, and speaking to a lot of educators at that conference who are, you know, teaching the future social workers, you know, and human service professionals, and they've got all kinds of questions about, like, gosh, how can I use this to, you know, help my students, to help, you know, prepare them for working in the field. Or whether it's now, again, in my role now with training folks who are already in the field, you know, the best way that I can see it being utilized is, let's say I'm going to train you on something new. One of the trainings that I co-facilitate with a couple of my colleagues is called Facilitating Attuned Interactions, or FAN. Wouldn't it be amazing if after I teach that, I have some means of providing supervisors with maybe even a custom designed AI chatbot that I can create, because ChatGPT lets you do that. If you're a paid subscriber, you can custom design your own chatbot with all kinds of scenarios and instructions and ways of interaction. So wouldn't it be amazing if I could provide professionals and students with an opportunity to practice these new things, right? Because sometimes we teach these things, we facilitate these things, and whether it's a professional or a student, they think, oh gosh, that's really cool. But then it's just sort of like, okay, now what, right? Do I just take an exam and a test and I get, you know, I get a passing grade on it, and so now I'm good to go? It's like, well, no, we know that that having a hands-on experiential way of teaching or facilitating these things is the most effective way for someone to learn. And if AI can assist in that, you know, where we impart this wisdom, we teach the things on the front end, okay, now go practice with your AI friend, you know, that to me is a vision for the future that would yield the best results, I think.
Well, it's certainly a fascinating field, and it's for as disconcerting as much of this is, it is comforting to know that there are thoughtful people like you who are thinking about the wisest ways and the most ultimately beneficial ways that this can be utilized to make lives better, and especially the lives of young people who are maybe experiencing some really painful struggles. And I know that we have just skimmed the surface in terms of all you will be exploring in your presentation that's coming up this Tuesday. Again, your presentation is called The Role of AI in Mental Health Support, Complexities and Considerations, one of a number of presentations that are going to be part of this event on Tuesday called Trauma in Our Community, Reimagining Solutions for Healing. Jason Witt, Outreach Specialist for Wisconsin Child Welfare Professional Development System, I thank you so much for being my morning show guest today. This has all been absolutely fascinating, and I so appreciate this opportunity to speak with you. And I thank you for your time, and I thank you for the good work that you are doing.
Oh, thank you, Greg. I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Monday on the morning show, I'm going to be speaking with three more people who are participating in the Trauma in Our Community Conference. They will be speaking on the topic of restorative justice practices in the arena of domestic violence. If you would like more information about Tuesday's event, you can go to uwm.edu/SCE. SCE stands for the School of Continuing Education. So uwm.edu/SCE. Once you reach that page, there is a link to conferences, and there you will easily find information on how to register for Tuesday's event. It will be taking place in downtown Milwaukee, but the event can also be attended virtually. One more time, that website for more information is uwm.edu/SCE for School of Continuing Education. Coming up this weekend, tomorrow, on the podcast version of The Morning Show, something from the archives that's quite fun. It is faculty and students from both UW Parkside and Carthage College talking about a study trip to Nicaragua that they had just completed. The guests include biology professor Gregory Mayer from Parkside and geography professor Julio Rivera from Carthage. And on Sunday, in honor of Father's Day, we'll have something father-related to honor that special day. To subscribe to the podcast version of The Morning Show, to hear a different morning show 7 days a week, look for The Morning Show with Greg Berg. It's available wherever you get your podcasts. Partly sunny skies in our forecast today with a slight chance of a shower developing this afternoon, a high of 71 degrees. Cloudy overnight with a low of 59 degrees. A pretty good chance of rain a little bit later in the weekend. Best chance is probably tomorrow night, possibly a shower and even a thunderstorm. Right now, actually, it's looking now like both Saturday and Sunday will be mostly sunny. We have restored our connection to Wisconsin Public Radio. This is WGTD HD.